This is Deanna Spingola. It is Sunday, June 30th, 2013, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is Bare Bones Broadcasting. My guest today is John Kaminsky. His articles may be found at therebel.org/Kaminsky or johnkaminsky.info. Welcome to the program, John.
Good morning, Deanna.
We might as well just call these little sessions of ours Sunday morning with John and Deanna.
That works for me.
All righty. You attended a wonderful conference. When was that? In January or February? I can't remember.
January 3-6, the Electric Universe 2013 Tipping Point Conference. And it consisted of about 300 people in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where it was 7 degrees at night. And they were almost all of them scientists of one discipline or another, some philosophers. And it's hard to know where to jump into this because a lot of people are familiar with thunderbolts.info and the electric universe concept. But I wrote a story, took me 4 months to write it for one reason or another, mostly to digest the information.
And you've presented it in such a way that the ordinary person who is not scientifically minded can understand it.
That's what I was trying to do, because these guys need more publicity because what they're doing is so important.
Oh, absolutely. And I've had Wall on my program before, on one of my specials, and it was terrific.
I remember.
Yes. And the information that they give and present just makes so much sense. And I believe in it.
Well, they've changed history, basically. They're very nice about it. They speak in scientific terms, and they don't make any exorbitant claims. But in that story I wrote called When Morning Becomes Electric, I wanted to get the basic discoveries that they had made, and the two most important ones that have really changed our perception of history are that ancient rock art, the petroglyphs that you see on stones and rock faces and mountainsides especially in New Mexico and Arizona. Are not just fancy designs that prehistoric people made. They're actually very accurate recordings of what people saw. And as I wrote in my story, it's like when you examine, if you have a bent to go into ancient history, and if you examine some of the ancient drawings and statuary and sculptures and etchings that prehistoric people made, it starts out in the caves of Lascaux about 35,000 years ago in France, where we have all these animals on the walls that are fairly realistic. And then at a later time than that, much of the artwork changes into these fantastic patterns that nobody ever recognized, these sunflowers and dragons and all this other stuff. And historians have been at a loss to describe why that happened. It's perplexed people down through time, and it's only recently that there's been a plausible explanation put forth, and that explanation has been put forth by the Thunderbolts guys, as I like to call them. Mm-hmm. They're really all PhDs, and there's at least several hundred of them. And the real epiphany came from the science of plasma physics, which when the leading plasma physicist, Anthony Peratt, somewhere between 1998 and 2000, was introduced to this ancient rock art, he hit himself in the forehead and said, "Oh my God, these are just like the patterns of plasma formations that we produce in the sky." So Dave Talbot and Wal Thornhill are the chief spokesman for this group, but there are many other scientists involved, and they have published a wealth of fantastic material that meshes ancient myth with these discoveries of the similarities of plasma formations to this ancient rock art that really expands our history by at least several thousands of years and maybe more. And the other main discovery that they pointed out is that although they don't really say this, this is how I've spun it, because this is my particular pet project to get at the origin of religions. The Earth was subjected to major catastrophes in the time before writing was developed, or just at the time writing was being developed, so that the religious myths that we have eventually trace back to this catastrophe. And the contention I made in my story was that the anthropomorphization, and that's a word that means putting a human personality on something that isn't necessarily human. All of the legends of ancient gods are actually metaphors for these planetary disasters. And that's why I was able to somewhat boldly conclude at the end of my story that the gods we worship today are really the anthropomorphized misperception of awesomely frightening geophysical events. And by that I mean comets strafing the Earth and destroying large parts of the Earth, wiping out civilizations in a single day, in a catastrophe that we can't even imagine what it was like. We've seen wars that have destroyed certain countries, and we've seen thunderbolts that scare the hell out of us, but we've never seen thunderbolts that happened to the magnitude that they happened when, as I say, much of the Earth was destroyed in 7 to 10,000 years ago. And just as language was being developed, so people didn't know how to describe these things, so they gave them human personalities, like the myth of Phaeton and Apollo slaying the python and all of these other things. So to my mind, the two main discoveries that the Thunderbolts guys have put forth and captured a very large and growing audience is that science has deceived itself for hundreds of years by not properly recognizing the power of electricity, and that our ancient history is anthropomorphized. It's garbled, it's jumbled, where we've named beings all-powerful gods that really, when you trace them back to their beginning, are only the actions of the planets, which in ancient times were much closer to the Earth than they are now.
Okay.
So when you interviewed Wal, which I listened to, Wal Thornhill, the other day, it's like you did your best to fight your way in, but it's a complex subject, and I myself at this conference was lost among all these scientists, and I could only grab onto a small portion of what was presented. I was after a certain thing because before I'd ever heard of the Thunderbolts efforts, and they've been going on really since the early 70s, I had a notion, and I think it might have been based on wondering what the auroras were, the auroras at the North and South Pole that produce all these wonderful colors in the sky. What are those things? How do they occur, and what do they mean? Well, when I talk about plasma, the auroras are made out of plasma, and it's what the scientists call the fourth state of matter, And it's like those of us who've been paying attention to science things over time have always been puzzled by this creation of a thing called dark matter, which a lot of people have heard of, but they don't really know what it is. And this dark matter comes out of quantum physics. It's really a mathematical postulate. And it's in the same category with the Big Bang theory, and that gravity controls everything. And I can't think of the other examples at the moment, but the scientific world has run on these ideas, these suppositions, these postulates that the research by the Thunderbolt scientists have cast into serious doubt, because once you understand that the power of electricity is trillions of times stronger than the power of gravity, you immediately get a new view of the universe. And especially when you read this material and find out that the sun is not nuclear, it's electric, and it receives energy from a web that really connects the entire universe. And this is why when I started thinking about the auroras, I started, and I guess I've got this idea from various spiritual things that I've read over time, that we're all connected, all living things are connected.
Oh, I absolutely believe that.
And but we've never known how they've been connected. And the answer is by electricity. And my grandiose idea about all this is that we can unite humanity, all of humanity, do away with all of the subjective, how did I put that? Did I write that down? No. All of these sectarian differences that we have, where adherents of one religion kill adherents of another religion because they're not pronouncing the name of God to their liking, we can do away with all that once we realize that we're all connected and there's a scientific way to prove it, and therefore all life has the same aim, and we shouldn't be killing each other over words, which is what we're doing. We're killing each other over abstractions. And I truly believe that hard empirical facts have a lot more validity than subjective religious revelations. Too many of these holy pronouncements have been uttered by charlatans with ulterior motives in an attempt to control the masses for profit. And I think that we are approaching the time where not only do we have the ability, but we must do this, because all we talk about every day are the threats to our existence that are deliberately put forth by people who are trying to profit off the misery of others. So we have a tremendous opportunity with this electric universe research to totally recalibrate human civilization into a more empirical framework and do away with these misperceived myths that have caused us so much misery.
Indeed. And of course, that will take a lot of effort, a lot of education. And you're talking about an emotional attachment, an emotional connection that people have and have had many times since they were born. And they are so indoctrinated into a particular religion or a particular way of thinking that it would be difficult to do, but certainly I feel the same way. I feel that we are all connected, not just as human beings, but we have a stewardship and obligation as humans to take care of the less so-called lesser beings on the planet, the animals and the living things that we share the planet with. And it is terrible to me the way that people treat animals. Not that I think that they're not the same species, but because they are less skilled in some things and more intuitive in many, many things,
yes,
that we really have an obligation not to destroy them for our own purposes.
I've always thought, or I've recently thought, not always, but I've recently concluded that the way we treat animals is the way we communicate with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no trouble. I have a lot of grasshopper and frog friends.
Good, good.
What I was going to say here, we basically have a dishonest world that's caused by a central lie. The lie that we don't die, that we, if we utter some magic words or follow some prescribed discipline, we will live forever. And I would guess that just about everybody who has lived on this planet has had a philosophy like that. But ever since I read a cultural anthropologist named Ernest Becker back in the 80s, I've been aware that all religions are a palliative for death, a cure for death. Because when we think about the fact that we only live 80 or so years, and then we're not going to be here and we don't know what happens, that causes us a tremendous depression. And we live in fear of it. We live in fear of it anyway. And so we have to devise some solution to get us out of this predicament, or we won't be able to think about anything else. And that's why religions were invented. But what I've learned in the 20 or so years since then is that all the corruption in the world is caused by maintaining this lie. And because the entire human species lives its life based on this lie, we're killing everything on Earth. It's kind of counterintuitive, or it's kind of paradoxical to realize that by believing in eternal life, we kill what's in front of us. But it was in my mind verified by a line from the Buddha that I read not all that long ago, which really sums it up for me. The world does not know that we must all come to an end here. That means we have a limited lifespan, and it's going to end at some point.
Mm-hmm. I hate to use the word "we" when we're talking about we are killing everything in front of us, because I don't think that that's applicable to all of us. I think there are certain groups of people who have assumed the position of God, and who have assumed a position of control. Let's put a position of control wherein they believe that they should make decisions based on their exclusivity, that they are going to control the rest of us, and in order to do this, that they take control of all the resources on the planet, which should be shared equally by all the living entities on the planet.
Well, yes, that's all true, of course. That's the Bilderberger thing. But not everybody agrees with me. Very few people agree with me on this. But I maintain that when you take it back to its core motivation, that it's like, what are you going to do with all that money? You're going to continue to give yourself luxuries and yachts and things like that. But I mean, How does that help? What are we here for, and how does that help other people?
It doesn't help
them at all. But the root cause of that is to anesthetize yourself from the knowledge that you're going to die with this endless array of toys and money. And my question is, what are you going to do with all that money? You know, it's like, I know a lot of people. In fact, just about everyone I know is motivated by money to insulate themselves from worry. But what are they really insulating themselves for? They're insulating themselves from the acknowledgement inside themselves that they are only here for a little time, and what is the point of being here? And the point of being here is to spread as much good cheer as you can, and help people in need, for me, because what would I do with millions of dollars other than give it to people who need it?
Exactly. Exactly.
There's another thing I read by accident here lately about the story of Gilgamesh, who was an actual king in the Sumerian city of Uruk in 2700 BC, and he goes on a long search for immortality and has it in his grasp, and finally the snake of immortality disappears from his hand, and he's not able to attain it, even though he's lost his best friend in the process trying to get it. And it's like Gilgamesh finally realizes that all men will eventually die, but humankind will always endure, and that's the purpose of having children. Life isn't lived in your own ego. All of these people who seek immortality are really trying for an immortality of their own egos rather than their soul, because if you do everything for yourself, the soul that supposedly survives death isn't going to be a very nice-looking thing.
Oh, indeed. And of course, you're talking about greed and all kinds of other things. And exactly. You are building something here with your characteristics that hopefully you can carry on afterwards. You mentioned the soul, which I believe is the physical and the temporal body plus the spirit, that entity that leaves the body when you die. And I think that, well, I believe that we die as human beings, but that we don't cease to exist. That is my hope and my faith. And of course, that is my religious indoctrination.
I read somewhere where it's impossible for any human to imagine the universe with them not in it.
That is true.
It is true. And it's like, but this is exactly, in my opinion, the root cause of our problem.
You don't think it's certain characteristics such as greed and those other things, the love of money and because we should all eat well. And this sounds kind of communistic, which I certainly don't want to go in. You know, to apply to us. But and even communism really isn't a sharing, an equal sharing of all the resources. It is a small minority taking all the resources and divvying it out to the masses according to their own concept of who should get what. And it's just very much like capitalism. And of course, both of those systems were invented by the very same group of people for their benefit.
Well, as you and I know now, communism is Jewish mass murder.
Exactly.
But the people who are drawn to communism are drawn to it by the same emotions that people are drawn to Christ. That there is a spirit that can be assumed by oneself and extended out into the world, and everything will be hunky-dory. Unfortunately, it seems to me like the creation of all of these religions use that lure to get idealistic and hopeful people into their movement. But once they're in their movement, they become slaves to that movement.
Mm-hmm.
Are forced to do all sorts of things that they never imagined they'd be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to Gilgamesh here, there's a second part of that quote, or it's not really a quote, it's the summation of his the work, which I say is extremely old, it's 4,000 years old. There is no heaven, there is no promise of eternal life, and there is no divine redemption or grace. The lesson that Gilgamesh brings back from his quest is not ultimately about death. It's about life. You have to accept the terms of your existence here. And as I said before, to deny death, to deny the fact that you're only here for a little while, is the root cause of all of the corruption that has beset the earth ever since that time. Because people refuse to give up their idea that they're going to go to a happy place. Everybody has it. It's like you have to have it to keep from going crazy. But the way for, in my opinion, the way for humanity to evolve and to develop real faith rather than this phony faith that has to rely on miracles and fancy stories and anthropomorphizations is to have faith in God without really knowing what his purpose is other than to foster life, that you don't need any of that stuff. All you have to do is act in the proper manner and show compassion to your fellow beings and help them when you can and ask them for help when you can't. That's all you can get. And to demand an itinerary in the afterlife is, I think, an insult to God and the height of folly, because there's no way we can know. There's no way we're ever going to know. And to try to forestall that in the Ray Kurzweil manner of creating for yourself an indestructible body and then somehow magically parking your consciousness in it is the height of idiocy and a perfect representation of what I'm trying to, the idea that I'm trying to get across is that as long as you have this idea that somehow you're going to live forever and demand of God to know what the itinerary will be, you're going to continue to create wars and corruption and it's why we are where we are today, where there are so many threats to our not only our continuing existence, but the continuing existence of our children. I mean, there's like no hope for children now between the childhood immunizations and the methane and the glyphosate and the radiation and the chemtrails. I mean, it's almost like somebody's trying to kill the world. And what is really going on is that everybody's trying to kill their own death, kill their own deaths with these fancy philosophies that have really taken the world down a dead-end street. And the only way that our species is going to survive is if we stop all of that and admit that we die and not ask of God for an insurance policy in the afterlife, but really just really relying on our own actions and our faith that there's so obviously a higher power that has created all of this for our benefit, that there's no reason to question it. There's no reason to have it reinforced. And the only thing that really matters is our actions in the world. And if our actions in the world are just and right and compassionate, then we absolutely have no worries when we die.
Do you ever feel that many people have substituted the state, the government, for their God? Look at the number of people who rely so much not on God, not on their own merits, not on their own work, not on their own production, but they rely on the state, and that the state has transferred this allegiance from that higher power to themselves. And you were mentioning all of the things that occur to us, and even the colony collapse of the bees, mm-hmm. which a third of our of the foods that we enjoy and that we eat depend upon the bees. And I was reading the other day that 25,000 bees were found recently just in one parking lot, dead mm-hmm. bees. Yeah. And but then when you look at some of the so-called elite who are supposedly leading the people, they hardly ever get these afflictions. Name one political leader that you can recall that has perished from cancer. And I think that they know things, that they have knowledge and of course, higher technology that they are employing against us. Mm-hmm. And they seem to just go on forever while the rest of us are perishing from all these horrible diseases. And, just kind of makes you wonder.
Well, yes, they have insulated themselves from hazards they themselves have created for everyone else. They have put forth the idea that the world is overpopulated. And maybe it is because there's certainly, what is it? There's two billion people? No. Some extraordinarily large number of people dies of starvation every day. And they've put it through their, they put it into their heads from the Club of Rome pronouncement in 1972 on down, that the world has too many people, and like Prince Charles wants to be a virus.
He probably, I consider that type of a person a virus.
He is a virus.
He doesn't have to come back as one.
But, I mean, the plans to reduce the population are well underway and really taking a lot of people every day. And it's like, I can't tell you the number of people I know who don't smoke or are coughing their heads off because of what's in the air now.
Oh, sure.
And but it's the root cause of it is the same thing, that you think you can pile up enough cash to live forever and you can't. And, you know, I think a lot of people reach the end and do all these life prolonging measures, but they all come to the same point where they're not here anymore because their systems expire. And even if Ray Kurzweil is right and we are able to transfer our consciousness into some indestructible vehicle, I'm utterly convinced that that indestructible vehicle will go insane and destroy itself, because that's the that's certainly the nature of the Jewish problem in the world, where and Kurzweil and the Jews are synonymous. It's the same philosophy where, I mean, the population reduction program comes right out of the Talmud.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, where they're going to kill or enslave everybody on Earth, and then they're going to be left with the Earth. And Jesus, who would want to be in that Earth other than a Jew?
Right. And of course, they perpetuate this. Even the Rothschilds die, but their generations continue to go forward with the same ideology, right, and the same objectives, and that is how they perpetuate their Talmudism.
Without seeing the point of it all, that your soul may live forever, and you're certainly welcome to imagine that it does, as long as that imagining doesn't hurt anybody else,
sure,
which it almost inevitably does. But your ego does not. And I think most people who adopt any religious orientation are really kind of mistaking their soul for their egos.
Mm-hmm.
And to admit to think that you're ego is going to survive along with your intellect is the foolishness that creates all of this warfare, that all of this corruption, all of this exploitation of other people. The number one human occupation is exploiting other people. Mm-hmm. And that, if you realize what your intelligence really is the exact opposite of what you should be doing.
Right. And when you consider that many people refer to this country as a Christian nation, and I think of all the destruction that the political leaders have enrolled the citizens to engage in, have recruited them to go out and kill and murder and rape and torture. And I think this is just so far from the idea of Christianity, it's preposterous. I don't know how people can even equate the two. I mean, it's just preposterous. And now you have, well, basically since 1991 and the implementation of the Noahide laws, this is no more a Christian nation than Israel is. There's the Israeli state.
Speaking of the Noahide laws, I saw a guillotine story the other day.
I did too. I thought, well, okay, this is what they are for, and because that is the punishment for worshiping a false god.
Exactly, that's exactly right. Now, on the subject of false gods, takes us back to the Thunderbolts.
Yes.
Not that any of the Thunderbolts guys talk about this. They don't. They're scrupulously avoiding the subject because they're all engineers
I kind of brought that up with Wall when I had him on the program.
What did you say?
I don't think that Of course, I don't believe in the Big Bang Theory. I don't believe that any of this just occurred. I believe that there is higher powers that use electricity to implement, to create, to restore. I believe in an electric universe, but I believe that somebody's in charge of it. I don't believe that it's just random and happenstance.
It's interesting. Do you see how you're anthropomorphizing?
Sure.
And it's like everybody, you can't help but do it, but you have to realize you're doing it. Because that's how...
But I'm not giving form to my higher power. I'm just saying I believe there is one.
I'm the same way. I'm proposing a theory here that I'm somewhat hypocritical about, because I fully recognize that when my last moment comes, I'm just going to rely on the Almighty to send me in the right direction. So I have it too, and it's kind of an unavoidable situation when you pit your intellect up against infinity. There's just no match for it, and you have to have faith, or there's nothing. And we can't really believe that there's nothing. That's just going to totally depress
right.
us. But to develop that into a detailed scenario requires a serious amount of lying,
mm-hmm.
a serious amount of
creative thinking,
and fantasizing. And it's my contention that this fantasizing is essentially a lie, and that it spreads its tentacles down through every area of human endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we have governments that can get up there and say we're the land of the free and home of the brave, and have a 200-year record of going around slaughtering innocent people to steal their resources, because that's what we have.
Sure. Absolutely. This is probably off topic, but have you ever been around a dead person?
Yes.
And have you ever tried to lift the dead weight, the weight of a dead person?
I was a hospital orderly once, and I did have to transport a person who had passed on to the morgue.
And the weight of a dead person is, it's dead weight. But that same individual, if you try and lift that same individual when they are alive, it is different.
It's lighter because
I think there is an innate spirit that leaves the body.
Well, there are physiological functions that are still at work. And if there's any consciousness at all, even if the person is paralyzed or immobile, they're trying at least mentally and emotionally to help you move them.
Yes. So that was just a thought.
I won't tell you my morgue story. It's too gruesome. But,
okay. All right. We'll leave that subject for another time.
Getting back to the electric universe idea, I think more and more people are realizing that existing science, as well as there's also a connection to existing governments, are totally based on fabrication. So wishful thinking of people, of systems like Google that they've devised that appear to be beneficial to the general populace, but really have this dark side to them that create negative things that we didn't expect. We're certainly seeing that with Google and its connection to the National Security Agency monitoring of everyone.
Well, even if you look at as you say, the sciences, when you talk about the Royal Society,
uh-huh.
And the Smithsonian Institute, and those kinds of it's well documented that those had Masonic beginnings, and that they, if you were a fellow of the Royal Society, then somehow your ideas, your you know, your what you believed was the standard, and so that was the acceptable thing that everybody needed to believe. And so they have, for decades, for generations, have controlled science through organizations like the Royal Society and the Smithsonian, and then our current institutions that you know, like Google or Facebook or any of those things. They seem to be designed to benefit us, where in fact they're designed to control us and to manage us.
Absolutely. That's a very good point. And it is something that the Thunderbolt scientists often bring up, because there has been an investment in the phony theories of quantum science, which was the Einstein, I believe, was Jewish, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. And he co-opted that theory. It wasn't his theory. He was
right.
He was a fraud.
Yeah.
As so many of them are. But because they award each other with such things as the Nobel Prize, they award each other, and these awards lend credibility, just like the Library of Congress lends credibility to all of the stories, like the Holocaust and all that kind of thing. They're institutions. They create institutions that give them credibility for each other. I mean, then the masses say, oh yes, look at, they got that prize. They got the well, even Hollywood does that.
I wrote a story back along the trail called Freud, Marx, and Einstein: A Matrix of Nihilistic Destabilization. And it turns out now, 100 years after they did their work, that all of their postulates were false. They were, their evidence was phony, and their suppositions were cynical. And this is something that the Electric Universe scientists are all acutely aware of, because mainstream science continues to ignore what they're saying, even though the overwhelming preponderance of evidence is in their favor, especially when they point out that the electric force is trillions of times greater than gravity, and the existing scientific paradigms say that the universe is held together by gravity, and to work out the inconsistencies in their mathematical computations, they invented this invisible substance called dark matter, which nobody can ever even describe. And it turns out that the dark matter that they're trying to make everybody believe exists is really plasma, which holds the whole universe together. And it's not nothing. It's something. And a lot of people have asked me, well, what the heck is plasma? And it is it's free electrons in the universe that is a great conductor of electricity that holds everything together. Our bodies are not solid; they're held together by the electrical relationship of cells to each other.
Yes.
And so the Earth is held together in the same way. Nothing is really solid. It's all living. It's all held together, from the Earth to the Sun to the stars. It's all held together by electricity. And I think this knowledge affords us a great opportunity to build a new philosophy of life that isn't dependent on these magical formulas that the people have invented, transubstantiation and all this other stuff. Because when you go back and research the construction of the existing religions, there are all these questions and all this evidence of theft of other religions, where they've cobbled together a system that will convince people that they should believe in their product. And by getting them to believe that, they're in control of those people and can pretty much make them do everything they want. But the real trademark of all these religions, the real fingerprint, is the fact that they get their followers to kill other people that don't believe what they do, when in fact it's been obvious to both of us for a long time that this is crazy, because people in Iran are the same as people in the United States. They have their own little foibles, their own little religions, but they basically are doing the same thing. They want the same things. They don't necessarily want to overthrow other people and abuse other people, yet they are convinced by their authorities who have the sanction of the existing religions to go and pulverize somebody else because they pronounce the name of God differently.
And of course, it's all out of fear. Oh, we've got to go and bomb this country because otherwise they're going to come get us.
And fear of what?
Yes. Fear of death.
That's right. Anyway, this conference that I went to was really a remarkable thing. I've never been in a place with a collection of such smart and thoughtful people.
Well, I'm sure that you fit in quite well.
Well, actually, I didn't because I got sick in the middle of it for reasons that are still not fully explained. Although my celebrated illness in January, and boy, was I sick. But it seems to, the real reason seems to have been the overprescription of blood pressure medication and keeping my blood pressure too low and preventing blood flow to my kidneys, and it almost killed me.
Wow.
Yep. And of course, doctors would be another show. But again, it comes back to
fake science.
Fake science, right. But beyond that, why are we trying to pile up all these toys? I'm sure there's a biblical line about this, something about the eye of the needle.
Yeah, the camel. But actually, the eye of the needle was the not the needle that we sew with, but the eye of the needle was the gateway into a city. And how true, how applicable. Yeah. You can't take it with you.
Yeah.
So I have to leave my books here.
But the addiction, right, I have the same problem. The addiction part of it is we can't let go of that because we don't know any other way. We're not free to abandon our possessions because we live in a world that's dependent on them.
Right. But I think it's the priority that we give to our possessions that really count. I think that... And also the kind of possessions that we have. Are we buying a lot of books to increase our intelligence, to increase our education? That seems like a very benign kind of thing to do. We are not buying things that take away from somebody else or that deprive others of something. And so I think it depends on which priorities are.
I know exactly what you mean because I have siblings who buy the cheapest books possible just to take them away from reality. And I buy the most expensive books I can afford because it's like every book I buy, I'm able to take something out of it and spread a little light.
Oh, absolutely. And certainly you can do that with, I don't read novels. I mean, I wouldn't.
No, me either.
Why would I read something that somebody made up when there's so much truth in the world?
And that goes back to try to reinforce my contention that hard empirical facts, as the Thunderbolts guys have produced about ancient history, to me, are far more valid than these spiritual parables that people have repeated and redacted down through time. It's almost as if the statements from the holy books, although many of them are wonderful statements, no question about it, but the many parables that are put forth in the holy books are really kind of spiritual fiction, as opposed to the nonfiction of the most accurate history in the world, of the most accurate prehistory of the world, comes. Isn't it?
I thought I muted myself here.
It was very, very, very quiet.
Okay.
Which is why I said Gesundheit very quietly. The Aboriginal legends tell of people climbing the ladder to the sky, and it turns out that the Thunderbolts guys are able to at least theorize but in a scientific way, that there was a ladder to the sky once upon a time where the planet Earth was actually connected to Saturn, our old sun, by a gigantic plasma filament. And of course, the natives of Africa and the skitty Pawnee in America and the Aboriginals in Australia have all these tales of people going up and down the ladder, the story of Jacob's ladder in the Bible.
Right.
It's one of the great correspondences that the Thunderbolts guys have uncovered. And this is Talbot and Thornhill, and especially Eduardo Cardona and Ev Cochran, who have, for me, produced a textbooks on prehistory that dwarf anything else that I've ever read. There is a whole history waiting to be uncovered that show that Venus was a comet, was once a comet during the upheaval of the solar system, not that long ago, less than 5,000 years ago, where giant thunderbolts passed between the planets. And when they passed to Earth, they destroyed large parts of it. They buried civilizations under 1,800 feet of rubble, and they gave birth to the legends of Zeus destroying the Titans. And all of the ancient deities that preceded Christianity have the unmistakable stamp of recording the events of this catastrophe and turning the planets into human personalities. That's how, before the creation of writing, that's how they were able to maintain the legends over the generations. Now, what happened after that was, after a couple of thousand years, the worship of Inanna or Ishtar, which are analogs for Venus, kind of died out because that was not the condition of the sky anymore, and it was getting harder and harder to make people to believe it because they didn't have the evidence right in front of them like they did in generations past. So this gave way about the time, what we call the time of Christ, to new religions, and the Alexandrian Jews were ready to pillage the ancient legends, steal all their parables, and mold them into a new religion that eventually destroyed Rome and comes down to us now in the churches that we have today.
And you have to kind of question, where did these people come from? What makes them the type of people that they are, that they could be so destructive?
That's the type of people we are.
Oh, that we let ourselves be destroyed.
That's right. That's right. Well,
Well, yes, out of ignorance, many, many times.
yeah, because back way back when there was no language, people had to have simple stories to at least calm their fears if they didn't understand what was going on. So somebody made up a story that this father gave. Gave the reins of his chariot to his son, and he drove to his son, S-O-N, and he drove too close to the sun, S-U-N, that caused all hell to break loose. And this was the parable that maintained the story over time. But now, when you go back and analyze all of these myths in the, especially the rock art, if you look at the Thunderbolts material, thunderbolts.info is the website. And if you go on YouTube and do thunderbolts.info, you have, I mean, I've always liked science fiction and outer space stories, but now you have all the science fact and outer space stories. For me, it's much more entertaining about how the scars on Mars were caused by giant thunderbolts rather than meteors. And it just opens up the electric universe is a whole new universe. And my real hope for what these guys accomplish is to give us a lead toward a new spiritual framework to go forward into the future in peace rather than in war, and to realize that we're all connected
Exactly.
by electricity.
I love the name, their name, the Thunderbolt. I just, and I believe in earthing.
Yes.
I totally believe in that, and I have felt it in my own life. Just the fact that that I sleep on an electric sheet, a sheet that has a current, thread current through it, and that is connected to an electrical power, I sleep better because I'm grounded. I'm in touch with the earth. When you take off your shoes and you go outside and walk in the grass, you are connected.
Yep, the same frequency of humans is the same frequency of the earth.
Yes, and so this is very compatible with everything that the Thunderbolts are producing, all of the...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly hope that people will read your article. You are going to continue, it says at the bottom, to be continued.
I'm working on the sequel. I've talked about some of it. We have to divest ourselves of the fear and develop a real faith, not a faith that's based on gimmicks and false stories from the past, that when we look into the eyes of another being that bleeds red and breathes deeply, that we have to realize our kinship with that being, and that goes for both humans and animals, and we have to enlarge our... really our faith in the obvious.
Right.
Now, we're up against it now because we have had this this fear, especially generated by this one group, has really created some serious hazards to our future safety.
Right.
And we are perhaps already poisoned beyond redemption. But in the face of all that, you have to maintain a faith that we were put here to maintain and care for this beauty, and despite all the people who have worked against us to destroy that beauty for a few shekels, to participate in whatever addiction that they have, we need to get past that. And we need to realize that there's absolutely nothing to worry about. Death is a part of life.
It is. It's just going through. It's going going into the next horizon. It's like the ship that leaves the shore. We don't see it, but we know that it doesn't disappear. It just goes somewhere else.
Because
well, here we go with my thinking again. But that's the way I feel about it.
Well, you have to have something. And,
sure.
And as I say, I'm a hypocrite myself because I say that...
I don't think you're a hypocrite. I think you're...
Let me finish the thought. Everybody has to have a plan for the continuation, and I opt to say all religions are faulty, therefore I don't need to know any of this arcane information. But I have my own... faith that when I go to sleep for the last time, I'm going to get exactly what I deserve, and I'm going to be very thankful for it.
Exactly. And I don't see that as hypocritical. I see you as a courageous person who lives exactly what you are promoting.
I hope so.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're that kind of person. So, with that... with that, we will probably conclude our interview, and let's do this again.
Thank you once again. I love these.
I do too. I do too. Thank you so much for being you and for producing the great work that you produce. It's very inspiring, and I love it. Love
Thanks.
You. You're a good person.
Same here. Thanks, Deanna. I'll see you next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.